Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 1 through 20. I'll call this chapter, Remember the Lord Your God. Our context is this, in Deuteronomy 7. Moses is continuing his second discourse to Israel on the plains of Moab, and his talk was of driving out the nations. How the Israelites, if they trusted in God, when they crossed the Jordan River, they're going to drive out the seven nations of Canaan. So we start now in Deuteronomy 8, verses 1 and 2, and Moses continues his second discourse to the Israelites. He says, "You must carefully follow every command I am giving you today, so that you may live and increase, and may enter and take possession of the land the Lord swore to your fathers. Remember that the Lord your God led you on the entire journey these 40 years in the wilderness, so that he might humble you and test you to know what was in your heart, whether or not you would keep his commands." Now in verse 1, Moses says you must carefully follow every command. He's already laid out the commands. He does two things. He lays out what the commands are, and then he says, now you guys need to keep those commands. As John Gill points out, obedience to God's commandments, the exhortation to obedience, is repeated over and over again to impress on them the importance and necessity of obedience. They needed it because they didn't want to obey. They were rebellious children for the most part. In verse 1, it says, if you obey, you may live and increase. And of course, they were too few to possess the land at the moment, so they needed to increase. Remember in the last chapter, God said, if you conquer the land all at once and not little by little, the wild beast to take over because you destroy the land and you don't have enough population to occupy the land. Now, in verse 2, we see our main theme of this chapter, do not forget the Lord. Moses says, remember that the Lord your God led you on the entire journey, etc., etc., etc. Remember is just the opposite. It is the same thing as do not forget. Remember. Remember what God has done for you. Now, this is a common theme in Deuteronomy. I'm going to read you. I've already done this in a previous chapter. I'm going to do it again. Just very quickly run through the verses in Deuteronomy where the exhortation to remember occurs. Deuteronomy 5:15, you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt and the Lord your God brought you out of there. Deuteronomy 7:18, you shall not be afraid of them. You shall well remember what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all of Egypt, all Egypt. Deuteronomy 8:2, you shall remember all the way which the Lord your God has led you in the wilderness these 40 years. Deuteronomy 8:18, but you shall remember the Lord your God. Deuteronomy 9:7, remember, do not forget how you provoked the Lord your God to wrath in the wilderness. Deuteronomy 9:27, remember your servants Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Deuteronomy 15:15, you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Deuteronomy 16:3, you shall not eat unleavened. You shall not eat leavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat with it, unleavened bread, the bread of affliction, for you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, so that you remember all the days of your life, the day when you came out of the land of Egypt. Deuteronomy 16:12, you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and you shall be careful to observe these statutes. Deuteronomy 24:9, remember what the Lord your God did to Miriam, put leprosy on her because she rebelled. Deuteronomy 24:18, but you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and that the Lord your God redeemed you from there. Deuteronomy 24:22, you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Deuteronomy 25:17, remember what Amalek did to you along the way. That was when they fought at Rephidim. Joshua beat them. Deuteronomy 32:7, remember the days of old. So, you see, my main point here is how often God told them to remember what God did in history for them. It's real easy to forget. Application for Christians today. Remember what God has done in your life. Don't ever forget that. You start getting rich. You start getting successful. Everything's going right. Remember what he's done for you in the times of trouble. Now, in verse 2, God says that, or Moses says that God led the Israelites for 40 years in the wilderness so that he might humble and test you to know what was in your heart. And that's the purpose of testing. This verse proves that God does test his people, whether or not you would keep his commands. Now, the NIV has test just like the Holman Christian Study Bible. The King James has prove. If you think about it, if I give an algebra test to a student, my purpose is to prove that he knows the material. So the concepts, the definitions are quite close. Now, this word test here has no connotation of tempting to evil. A lot of times, not here, but in other places, the old English King James translation will have tempt, and it makes it sound like God is tempting you. No, God never tempts you. James says that. He does test you, though, to see what's in your heart. Let me give you some scriptures showing the meaning of test as it means here to prove. 1 Peter 1:7. This is New American Standard. So that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire. Now, God is not trying to destroy you by fire. He's trying to test you by fire to prove that you have faith. He's expecting a positive result. Exodus 20:20. Moses responded to the people, "Don't be afraid, for God has come to test you so that you will fear him and will not sin." So God does test his people to see what's in their heart. Genesis 22:1. "And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham." This is King James. "And said to him, Abraham," and there's an example of how that old-fashioned translation, tempt, sounds like God's tempting Abraham to sin. No, it means test. Then the modern translations will have test there, that God did test Abraham. That was in the incident of God asking Abraham to take his son, his only son, Isaac, up on Mount Moriah to sacrifice him. God tested him. He didn't tempt him. He tested him. Deuteronomy 8:16, "Who fed thee," and this is also King James, "who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee and that he might prove thee." And again, prove is what test means. In fact, that's actually a nice translation there, even though it's old-fashioned, because when you test somebody, the purpose is to prove that they can pass the test. Now, there are some occasions when the word tempt does mean to seduce to evil, such as in James 1:13, and if I remember correctly, it's the same Greek word. I know in English we have a trouble distinguishing those two things. In Chinese, it's exact, shaitan, I remember that word, it's the exact same Chinese word that can either be translated as tempted or tested. James 1:13, "No one undergoing a trial should say, I am being tempted by God, for God is not tempted by evil." Now there the word means seduce to do evil. So don't ever think that God is seducing you to evil. He's not tempting you. And he himself doesn't tempt anyone. God himself doesn't seduce to evil anyone. 1 Corinthians 7:5, "Do not deprive one another sexually, except when you agree for a time to devote yourself to prayer. Then come together again, otherwise Satan may tempt you because of your lack of self-control." In other words, you don't have sex with your wife, some other cute honey comes by, and you might be seduced to evil. There's nothing about trying or proving there. It's just straight out seduction to sin. So those are the two meanings of test. So all of this is to say that God does test his people to see what's in their heart. We don't get around that. We go now to Deuteronomy 8:3. "He humbled you by letting you go hungry." Talking about God did that. "Then he gave you manna to eat, which you and your fathers had not known, so that you might learn that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord." Now Moses continues his speech, recounting what had happened in the wilderness. Now, God let the people go hungry. And you say, how would God do something like that to people? Well, if God never caused us to hunger, we would never experience miraculous provision. If you don't have defeat in your life or warfare in your life or struggle in your life, you never know what victory is. Well, these people experienced hunger, and then God gave them manna to eat. Easy application to the New Testament Christian life. Adam Clark says this, quote, "God never permits any tribulation to befall his followers, which he does not design to turn to their advantage. When he permits us to hunger, it is that his mercy may be the more observable in providing us with the necessaries of life." I believe that every Christian at some point, just like Paul, is going to go through periods of want where there's no money and you don't know where it's coming from. You trust in God and he will never, ever leave you or forsake you. Now let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 4. "Your clothing did not wear out and your feet did not swell these 40 years. Now, how is it that the Israelites' clothing never got old and wore out? Here's several options. John Gill suggests that perhaps the Israelites used the clothes of those who died in the wilderness. Dead person doesn't need clothes, so let's borrow them. John Gill suggests another idea. Perhaps the Israelites used the spoils they took from Amalek when they beat Amalek right before they got to Mount Sinai, when Moses held his arms up and Joshua beat the Amalekites. Maybe the Israelites just took clothes from the Amalekites, Gill suggests. Gill suggests a third option. Maybe the Israelites brought a lot of clothes from Egypt. Now here's a great option, the fourth option that Gill comes up with. The manna the Israelites ate didn't produce sweat, so the clothes didn't deteriorate. Well, that's a wild one. Here's another possibility. This is not from Gill, but from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, and Clark. Perhaps the clothes were purchased by barter from neighboring tribes. Now, that's five solutions that are all natural, and four of them perhaps are perfectly reasonable, actually. But you usually read the verses miraculous, their clothing did not wear out miraculously. Well, I always say that if you got a choice between choosing miraculous and natural, you take natural first. Otherwise, you start manufacturing miracles. There are plenty of miracles in the Bible. You don't need to manufacture any more than are already there. But there are two views on that, basically a natural view versus a supernatural view. Let me give you what Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says. He says it was miraculous that the Israelites' clothes did not wear out. Quote, the strong and pointed terms which Moses here uses indicate a special or miraculous interposition of their loving guardian in preserving them amid the wear and tear of their nomadic life in the desert. But contrary to Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, we have Clark's opinion. Quote, the plain meaning of this much tortured text appears to me to be this. God so amply provided for them all the necessaries of life that they never were obliged to wear tattered garments, nor were their feet injured for lack of shoes or sandals. If they had carvers, engravers, silversmiths, and jewelers among them, as plainly appears from the account we have of the tabernacle and its utensils, is it to be wondered as if they also had habit, that means clothes, and sandal makers, weavers, embroiderers, and such like? Well, of course they did. And the traffic which we may suppose they carried on with the Moabites or with traveling hordes of Arabians doubtless supplied them with the materials, though as they had abundance of sheep and neat cattle, they must have had much of the materials within themselves. It is generally supposed that God by a miracle preserved their clothes from wearing out, but if this sense be admitted, it will require not one miracle, but a chain of the most successive and astonishing miracles ever wrought to account for the thing, for as there were not less than 600,000 males born in the wilderness, it would imply that the clothes of the infant grew up with the increase of his body to manhood, which would require a miracle to be continually wrought on every thread and on every particle of matter of which that thread was composed. And this is not all. It would imply that the clothes of the parent became miraculously lessened to fit the body of the child, with whose growth they were again to stretch and grow. I don't know what Clark means by that last statement, but basically what he's saying is it doesn't make sense to say this is miraculous. I tend to agree with him. Now, it was logical that clothes got old on long travels. Clothes wear out in the desert. Remember in Joshua, those fake ambassadors that came into Joshua's camp pretending that they were from a long way away. Joshua 9:5, they wore old patched sandals on their feet and threadbare clothing on their bodies. Their entire provision of bread was dry and crumbly, but not the Israelites. They had, however, whether it was miraculous or natural, they had good clothes all the way through the 40 years. And again, Moses is trying to remind the Israelites how good God was to them and how good he's going to be when they cross over that Jordan River. We now turn to Deuteronomy 8, verses 5 through 9. Keep in mind that the Lord your God has been disciplining you just as a man disciplines his son. So keep the commands of the Lord your God by walking in his ways and fearing him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land with streams of water, springs, and deep water sources, flowing in both valleys and hills, a land of wheat, barley, vines, figs, and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land where you will eat food without shortage, where you will lack nothing, a land whose rocks are iron and from whose hills you will mine copper. Verse 5 says, keep in mind, the KJV has keep it in your heart. It shows that mind and heart are very similar in the English translations. It means to meditate upon. It doesn't just mean to keep it in your mind, remember it. It means to meditate upon this, that the Lord your God has been disciplining you. And of course, the discipline is talking about all the rough stuff that happened on the Exodus. But this is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. God was disciplining the Israelites so that they would learn to serve him. And notice that the result of the discipline is very, very good. In verses 7 through 9, we see all the good stuff waiting for the Israelites. A land with streams of water, springs, and deep water sources. A good land. A land of wheat, barley, vines, figs, pomegranates, olive oil, and honey. You eat food without shortage. Now, wheat and barley are mentioned. Those are the two main harvests of Israel. The barley harvest began at Passover in the early spring, and the wheat began at Pentecost in the early summer. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that the barley and wheat harvest were so abundant that they often yielded 60 and 100 fold. We see this in Genesis 26:12. Isaac sowed seed in that land, and in that year he reaped 100 times what was sown. So it was a land of milk and honey. Its rocks are iron, Moses says in verse 9. That means they were iron mines. Adam Clark says this could also include the idea that iron ore was lying on the surface of the ground, could be. Now it says, from the hills you will mine copper. The NIV has copper. The Holman Christian Study Bible has copper, but the KJV has brass. Now that is a bad translation. You don't mine brass, because brass is created by mixing copper and zinc. There is no such thing as a brass mine. You have to create copper and zinc by mining the copper and mixing it with zinc. It's interesting to me that if you go through the desert there in southern Israel, you can see the dark copper veins in the red sandstone. So our tour guide pointed out and said, that's copper, that's copper, that's copper. I didn't realize at the time that this copper was mentioned in the Old Testament as something that the Israelites could get. I do know from reading Egyptian history that the Egyptians went over into the Sinai Desert to get copper. And so there was wealth above the ground and there was wealth below the ground. We now turn to Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 10 through 14. When you eat and are full, you will praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. Be careful that you don't forget the Lord your God by failing to keep his command, his ordinances and statutes I am giving you today. When you eat and are full and build beautiful houses to live in, and your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold multiply and everything else you have increases, Moses sounds like Joel Osteen, Benny Hinn, and the prosperity preachers. Be careful that your heart doesn't become proud and you forget the Lord your God. Now, that's the part that Joel Osteen never mentions. Not that I've heard. And Cash Flow Dollar and Benny Hinn, they don't talk about, you know, if you chase money all the time, you'll get proud. But it's true that if you follow God's commands, you will be prosperous. And that's what Moses is saying here. You'll be prosperous. And when you get prosperous, verse 14, be careful that your heart doesn't become proud. And you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the place of slavery. Moses is telling the people that you start putting your trust in money, it's going to be bad business. Now, God did want to destroy their prosperity. He wanted them to be prosperous and to remain faithful to him. And that is possible. There are rich people today who follow the Lord closely and who devote their money to advancing the cause of the gospel. Of course they are. That is possible. But it's also very easy to forget God. And so Moses is telling them, don't forget God. And of course, that fits with the theme of our chapter, chapter 8, which is remember the Lord your God. Don't forget is the same thing as remember. Remember all those verses I read you in the book of Deuteronomy about remember the Lord your God. We go now to Deuteronomy 8, verses 15 through 18. He led you through the great and terrible wilderness with its poisonous snakes and scorpions, a thirsty land where there was no water. He brought water out of the flint-like rock for you. He fed you in the wilderness with manna that your fathers had not known in order to humble and test you, so that in the end he might cause you to prosper. You may say to yourself, my power and my own ability have gained this wealth for me. But remember that the Lord your God gives you the power to gain wealth in order to confirm his covenant he swore to your fathers as it is today. Moses finishes off verse 18 by saying, look, God, yeah, you're going to get wealthy, but it's God that gives you the power to get wealth. So don't think it's you that did it. Don't say to yourself, my power and my own ability have gained this wealth for me, Moses says in verse 17. And he says, God gave you the power to get wealth. Why? For a reason. To confirm his covenant he swore to your fathers. Because a prosperous people, of course, will expand and have more people, and they'll pretty soon they'll have descendants like the stars of the sky and the sand of the seashore. Now, the snakes in the wilderness that are mentioned in the desert that they experienced, we can see that in Numbers 21, verse 6, and the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and many people of Israel died. He also said there was no water in the wilderness. This was happened in two places, at Rephidim near Mount Horeb. Exodus 17, 6, I'm going to stand there in front of you on the rock at Horeb. When you hit the rock, water will come out of it, and the people will drink. Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel. That was when he struck the rock, and he was supposed to speak to the rock at Kadesh Barnea 38 plus years later. When they ran out of water again, he didn't. He struck the rock, and for whatever reason, God was angry with him, and Moses didn't go into the land of Israel because of it. So it happened twice that there was no water Moses doesn't mention that. He just says there was no water. And, of course, the manna was talked about in Exodus 16. He says once again that the feeding with the manna in particular was in order to humble and test the Israelites. You might think, well, why would feeding a people with manna, why would that make them humble and why would that test them? Well, it wasn't the manna per se that caused them to be humble and to be tested. It was the hunger that went before the manna. They had to trust God to give them food, and so that's where the test was. So Moses condenses a little bit. And then verse 16 says, after that testing, what was the end of that test? So that in the end, he might cause you to prosper. Remember, that's what all tests are for, to shape us up, to get us flying right, thinking right, acting right, so that we may be successful. That's what prosper means, to be successful. Successful, it does not necessarily mean to be financially wealthy, although in the context here, Moses is saying they were going to be wealthy, obviously from what we've just read. Once again, in verse 18, remember, there's that word remember again. Remember the Lord your God gives you the power to get wealth. And again, the point is, it's not you that has the power to get wealth. It's God that has the power to give you wealth. And that's what is so often forgotten with wealthy people. They think, I did this, I'm a big shot. And they forget that the love of money is the root of all evil. And he who builds his house on sand will watch it wash away when the floods come. God gives us power. God gives the Israelites power. Zechariah 4:6, so he answered me, this is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel, not by strength or by might, but my spirit, says the Lord of hosts. That's where the power comes from, through Christ, through the power of the Holy Spirit. In the Old Testament, of course, they didn't know about Christ, but that's to make the application. That's where we get the power today. Power to get wealth, the power to be successful. It comes through the Holy Spirit. We go now to Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 19 through 20. If you ever forget the Lord your God and go after other gods to worship and bow down to them, I testify against you today that you will perish. Like the nations the Lord is about to destroy before you, you will perish if you do not obey the Lord your God. So God is threatening hellfire and damnation on the seven nations of Canaan, but he also says, hey, you want to be just like those nations of Canaan? Disobey my law. Disobey my word. Disobey me, and you'll be destroyed. The application of that is very easy to see. You disobey God long enough in this life, you will be destroyed. And on that happy note, we have finished Deuteronomy chapter 8. We are now ready to proceed to Deuteronomy chapter 9 in our next audio, verses 1 through 29. We will entitle that chapter, Not Because of Righteousness. In other words, not because of Israel's righteousness will they have success in the Promised Land. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.